Okay, so I have been kind of made to volunteer, which I guess I did, to summarize the conference. You know, one advantage of summarizing the conference is that you get to listen to all the talks. It's an advantage and a disadvantage, but I had to listen to all the talks. But I'm not going to follow my hero, Bert Halperin, who summarizes the conference, usually very scrupulously, tells you the gist of each talk, because I simply am not capable of doing that. So what I'm going to do is to give you some flavor and, you know, my own angle on that. Some of these points have been discussed in this very useful discussion that we had. So some of the points I'll make are repeats. So first, the title, you know, Exotic Order. I need to explain that. We had 22 talks, 7 experimental talks, 15 theoretical talks. And in fact, there was no connection, direct connection between the experimental and theoretical talks. I mean, I don't know whether that was deliberate on our part or the amount of exotic out there in experiment is basically a set of measures zero, and actually zero, not a set of measures zero, okay? So, but the experimental talks we chose were talks which would be considered, you know, exotic phenomena, not necessarily this precise sense we are discussing now, but they're interesting subject. So what is exotic? So this is taken from the, you know, ITP webpage describing our program. So it says, organization of strongly interacting quantum condensed matter which do not fit the standard paradigms of solid state and statistical physics. And then after a while, we say, rather than attacking from the bottom up, this program will take the top-down approach of focusing on qualitative new concepts. And basically what we are saying here, this is very carefully written, I think by Leon most likely, is that, he's very diplomatic. I think what we are saying, to hell with the Hamiltonian, okay? There is something to be said for that. We are going to think of beautiful, wonderful things which are well-defined, as Matthew made the point, which are not just pie-in-the-sky fantasy. They are well-defined beyond scenario, well-defined toy model where, you know, deconfined criticality happens, fractionalization happens, topological matter shows up, and then we are, you know, going to go down from this top and see what is there at the bottom, you know, where there is room at the bottom. Now, an immediate question that comes up, maybe not to you, but certainly to me and even to my wife, what the hell am I doing in this program, okay? I mean, I am your, you know, I'm your ultimate, I have no clue, okay, I have no clue. I'm your ultimate bottoms-up person, okay, I like the bottom, you know, I'm on the bottom feeder, there's a huge fish, you know, tarboat or whatever, you know, we're in the bottom, huge tasty fish. So I don't know, to honestly, I mean, I have been asking this question for the last 3 months, what am I doing here? I'm not sure I know the answer, okay?
Why are you giving this talk?
That's a good question too, you have to ask Leon. Okay, so the fact of the matter is a very ambitious goal, okay? Now, kidding aside, it's a very ambitious goal, and you know, to some extent, we've achieved this goal. So I looked up, I borrowed Dan Hone's dictionary, American Heritage Dictionary, looked up the meaning of the word exotic, which you had to do once before because of certain intervention from UCLA, but that's a different story, okay? So these are the meanings, you know, Latin is exoticus, Greek is exoticos. So these are the meaning in Dan Hone's dictionary, introduced from another country, not native to the place where found, outlandish alien, this is archaic, strikingly, excitingly different or unusual, relating to striptease, it shows up there, I'm not making it up, okay? I didn't make it up, I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, this is just a direct, okay? Now, you know, I have my own choice in here, but I think what the organizers meant is that in this case, exotic means unusual, perhaps beyond current paradigms, if one is lucky. And the paradigms, of course, have to be defined fairly carefully. You know, we want really exotic stuff. So we're going to talk about paradigms, you know. Now, we all know that paradigms, by construction of things, we do not shift so easily, okay? Because if paradigms shifted always, then paradigms would have no meaning. Scientists, by nature, are very conservative. They should be very conservative. They have to be very conservative. I'm extremely conservative. I don't like changes because if things always change, you could not do science, okay? Laws should be very robust, and laws should remain valid. And so whenever people talk about exotic, my first reaction is, no, there must be an easier explanation. And I have had reasonable success with this attitude. Not always, but federal government likes me, you know, I mean, this attitude, this attitude goes very far with the federal government, okay? I mean, if a federal government, federal government likes me more than anybody else in this room because of this attitude of mine, I'm extremely conservative. I see a phenomenon and everybody else is exotic. I say, no, maybe band structure will explain it, okay? And so what are, I mean, I'll come back to these points I'm making here, but let's talk about the, you know, I mean, this is, look, this is a summary. I mean, do not this is very coarse-grained. What are some of the great paradigms of solid-state physics? Band theory is one of the greatest paradigms. They're all very robust, you see. They're all very, very robust. If you want to learn about any material, no matter how exotic they are, first thing you need to know, what's the band structure telling you, okay? Fermi liquid theory is another very robust thing, which, you know, we don't like, some of us do not like anymore, but it's a very robust paradigm, has been around for a very long time, and all of our current technology, you know, your transistors, your computers are based on basically Fermi liquid theory, electrons running around as little balls. It works very, very well. It works very, very well down to 1,000 angstroms, because that's what these Intel chips are now. Perturbation theory, you know, Feynman-Dyson perturbation theory, mean field theory of various kind, and for critical phenomena and other way of thinking about symmetries, Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson theory. There are other paradigms which are, you know, connected with this in some manner, but these are the five great paradigms, and they're all very robust. That's what they share, you know. They apply in most cases, which is why exotic is very interesting. It's not so easy to think of things which would not fall under one of those things, at least at some level. Now, let's think of the great phenomena in solid-state physics which introduced some kind of paradigm shift. There are not that many, okay? Superconductivity was the first great one. I think it was discovered, 1911, and took 50 years, because it clearly, you know, required a completely new paradigm. Breaking of E1 symmetry. And the reason it was hard is that DC is only of the order of a Kelvin, and you knew whatever perturbation is causing it is very small energetically, but you also knew that the energy scale of electrons in metals is 10,000 Kelvin, because that's what Fermi temperature is. So it was a big mystery because of this reason, that it's a very small energy scale, but it must be something that's totally non-perturbative, because that very small energy scale of the order of a Kelvin is causing this 10,000 Kelvin big beast to change in a very fundamental way. And it took 50 years, and it took much longer than QCD, QED, general relativity, all these great, you know, great pillars of modern physics were solved faster than, I mean, a lot of people who do not do condensed matter physics do not realize that, how crucial BCS theory is to the development of, you know, modern theoretical physics. It took 50 years to solve because of, so, you know, here is a paradigm that took 50 years to develop. Then superfluidity, you know, I can go on. Quantum Hall effect, fractional quantum Hall effect, of course, did not took anywhere near as long, because you are just lucky. I mean, somehow God or somebody told Laughlin what the wave function is, and we went from there, because, you know, he just came from nowhere. I was actually working on quantum Hall effect in this room. I and maybe Eduardo, maybe Tony Z, if you are old enough to have been working on quantum Hall effect, when you saw the wave function, when I saw the preprint, I immediately knew it was a solution. But I mean, all of us had the same feeling, but where it came from was not very clear. But again, he does, okay? And you know, so the thing is that, again, this was a manifestly non-perturbative, non-Fermi liquid tech solution, so one required an inspired guess. It did not happen through systematic thinking over many years. And then there are many other examples, but, you know, not many. The other examples, Anderson localization is certainly one, Mott transition, Josephson effect, one of the few true spectacular predictions. There are not that many predictions, you know. Most phenomena came as phenomena, and then the theory came, and the paradigm may or may not have shifted. But there are very few. Josephson effect is one, Abrikos of vortex lattice and type 2 superconductivity is another one, and Costa-Lestalis, I would say, another one, okay, which is not quantum, as we discussed. So the point I'm trying to make is that if you look at the whole history of solid-state physics, do not count on paradigm shifting, exotica showing up every day. You know, you have to do a lot of work to find things shifting. So one warning that I have, I do not work on exotica, but a few years ago, once we did, effective field theory often predicts possibilities or scenarios for exotic order and criticality, which do not always occur in nature. I mean, this all of you know, but this needs to be overemphasized. I have these two papers, overall, almost, you know, 80 pages of physical review, with Bert Holperin and Eugene Demmler and Charles Wang. And in these papers, we predict a huge number of exotic quantum Hall phases using effective field theory, you know, with names like isospin, skarmion stripe. They're exotic in slightly different sense from what you're discussing in this workshop, but never mind, they're very exotic. Now, what happened is that then we went ahead, since we like calculations, we went ahead and actually created variational wave functions, and because Charles Wang was involved, he's a great calculator, we calculated the energetics of all these states. Every single case, these 80 pages, we found the energetics of these exotic phases were never good enough. They were local minima, but never global minima. And they were not, you know, very bad, but they were never within at least mean field theory that you could do. And so basically, it's so bad that Eugene did not even want to talk about this. He said, what's the point of talking about it? None of them actually occurs in nature. The energy is not good enough. And this is something I think one should keep in mind. Nature may sometimes be boring. I mean, this is, you know. So eventually you need numerical work and experiments. I mean, this point has been made many times in the discussion, but short of experiments and numerical work, short of real phenomena, at first numerically and then experimental, you're not going to make it a subject. I'm sorry, okay? I mean, it's not going to become a subject because of an ITP program. It's not going to become a subject because Bob Lawson got very mad and sent around an email castigating everybody. You need more. And you can't go to, okay? I mean, no, not more Bob, okay? You definitely need phenomena, and I mean, my concern is that to get phenomena, you have to convince experimentalists to look for phenomena, and I have to say, now I'm trying to be slightly serious, I did not see too many signs here of telling the experimentalist something concrete and doable so that the experimentalist is going to go home, look for it right away. I think we have to do more work coming up with signatures which are signatures from the experimental perspective rather than from our perspective. And that requires, you know, I do not know what kind of work is needed for that. We were discussing some of that last part. Shivaji was making some comments which I thought were quite penetrating. Duncan made some comments which I really liked. He was trying to connect the quantum Hall effect. The reason connection quantum Hall effect is good is that there the experimental situation is pretty clear-cut. The systems are the system is a simple system. But this is where we need a lot more work, okay? So what are the paradigms or buzzwords that came up in this conference? If you just look at the title, a huge number of rather heavy terminology just in the title. Quantum loop gas, topological matter, new states of matter. This one is quite common in condensed matter physics these days. I think it started with Laughlin, you know, new state of matter. We just have too many new states of matter. I mean, very soon, you know, topological quantum computation, this already existed, emergent photons, lambda forbidden transition, deconfined quantum criticality. Look, QC stands for the two buzzwords, it's same initials. I mean, this has been really taking off, you know. QC could be quantum criticality or quantum computation. I mean, you got to know from the context. Dissipationless current, quantum Hall lexicon condensate. This one actually happened for a change, you know. What a relief. I have one example of something that happened. Bose-Glass, this was not in the title, but I like Bose-Glasses, so I put it in there. It was in the talk, okay?
It also happened.
It also happened, yeah. It's not as exotic. Now, if you contrast that with the hot topics in strong correlation, what are the hot topics in strong correlation? You know, things that really smart people work on, okay? No, but that's true, right? I mean, you know, science advances through what the best people do, whether there are phenomena or not. I mean, string theory is an example. Height is, you know, I'm not joking. It's a fact. I mean, if you talk to sociologists of science, they'll tell you that there is, you know. So height is the word. Height is showed up only in one title, okay? Quantum Hall in one title, dilated magnetic semiconductor. I threw this in only because I work in this field, okay? this is not particularly hot, but you know, I work in it, so it should be there, okay? Financially very hot, smoking, okay? Quantum phase transition, these show up only one. These four words only show up once. And so that tells you that we are certainly trying to think about different things here. We are not doing more of the same. That's very deliberate. I give the organizers, leaving me out. Well, I'm not going to use euphemisms anymore, okay? Organizers really mean Leon Balance, okay? Let's just be honest here, okay? Leon did an enormous amount of work for this thing, so, you know, all the good things are because of him and bad things are all because of Matthew and I, and Matthew is not even an organizer. All right, so what are themes that are emerging? Now, here I'm trying to be a little bit more serious, and I may have missed some themes, because I should tell you, disclosure. I understand well one-third of what's going on here. Another one-third I understand reasonably, and there is another one-third that I really don't understand. And I'm not trying to be modest here. That's just a fact. So when I'm talking emerging themes, I'm talking it from my perspective. So transcending Lambda, Ginzburg, Wilson paradigm is certain emerging thing. And I think that if that happens in a generic manner, even for models which may not be that easily experimentally observable, it will be a great thing, because this will be a new way of thinking about phases and phase transitions, which always lead to new ideas. Okay, this is just history of science. If you have a really new good idea, it leads to phenomena. Okay, there's just no question in my mind. So, you know, we heard beautiful talks, string net condensation. I mean, my understanding of this is based on not just Wendt's talk. I had some discussion with him. I think it's a beautiful development. Define quantum criticality and fractionalization. You know, question is the first order transition or not? I mean, okay, already discussed questions. You got to see it. We got to have systems. But beyond that, the problem here is it first order transition or not? As you know, as theorists, we cannot rule out first order transition. They're boring, but we cannot rule them out. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do. Okay, and how to work to observe? This point came up repeated in our discussion. Topological matter. We had a whole class of talks on topological matter, mainly motivated by topological quantum computation, but we all know the motivation for this is much deeper. This is a new kind of matter in quantum Hall. Of course, in certain situations we have topological matter, but wouldn't it be nice if you have many, many actual concrete examples of that, because then we all have to learn this, you know, loop, web, strings, all these things. Otherwise, I personally have no motivation to learn these things. You know, I don't care about tempered Lieb algebra unless topological matter is showing up everywhere. If it shows up everywhere, maybe I'll ask one of my students to learn it. Now, you know, I will buy the books for him, though. The six books that Nick Reed told us about, the six books, okay? I'm going to buy all six. Okay? And Nick gave a beautiful talk on you know, this algebra, some aspects of this algebra. What? That's true. Now, see, now one more serious question. In fact, this is something I'm actually working on. So far, I have made no progress whatsoever. That is that we talk about, when you're talking about topological matter, if you want to do quantum computation, you have to do something called braiding. It's basically topological braiding. What does it mean to talk about braiding? I mean, when you're talking about topology, it's absolutely clear. You just draw a line around the object you are going through. When you talk about real matter and quasi-particles, it's not clear to me at all what it is meant by that, because quasi-particles are not little balls you can push around. That's what I think. So what does it mean for a concrete experiment, this word braiding? And we got to define these things at least operationally before experimentalists, and Jim is sitting in the back. I assume he'll agree with me. I mean, if you just go to him and say, Jim, can you braid quasi-particles? He'll have better things to do. I mean, I hope he'll say it. He has become too old. He says, yeah, I want to braid them, okay? You got to tell him what it means. And I did not see...
Actually, there are proposals.
Oh, I know, I have read them.
Yeah. You can do quantum interferometers.
Yeah, and I know that. Yes, all those things are in my proposal for this thing. But when you look at them in depth... When you look at them in depth, they're nothing more than saying braiding, okay? I mean, they are not operational statements.
No, I disagree with that.
Okay,
very specific quantum interference, whether we can actually manufacture them.
That's the second part is what I'm questioning. Yeah, sure. Oh, no. In principle, no problem. Oh, I agree completely. Okay. And then the last one, which is, you know, where we have several talks, but they're connected. It's not like they're not disconnected. This and this are clearly connected, and there's a connection between, you know, this and this, of course, is quantum frustration. And it's a beautiful subject where, you know, classical systems which are frustrated, give rise to spin glass and other materials. If you have geometric frustration and quantum mechanics in spin models, new kind of order emerges. This is something I'm understanding, I guess, over the last 10 years, 5 years. And this is leading, this is where experiments are already coming, because this is a more well-defined subject in some sense, and advances have already taken place. So when you look at it, spin wins for sure. Okay, we had 14 talks on spin and magnetic systems models phenomena. I've defined them rather generously. Even Eisenstein is in magnetic phenomena. Well, he has pseudo spin, but you know, good enough for me. Okay, his thing is. So when you look at it, a huge number are spin models, and the reason is obvious. Spin models are good for doing the kind of exotic physics you are doing. So naturally, spin models will be used extensively. Then there are four talks, three of them exclusively on topological quantum computation, and Eugene Demler's talk certainly had a very interesting piece about how to artificially generate Kitaev lattice on Kitaev model on an optical lattice, which connects with this topological quantum computation, because if you can do that, it's universal, so you can do topological quantum computation. There were four talks on high TC and strong correlation. Antoine Georges gave a very talk very close to the kinds of things I like, but it surely wasn't exotic enough, Antoine, if you're here. I mean, that's just a statement of fact. It's something I love, but as you said, then Ali Yazdani and Hale and Schrifford, they talked about high temperature superconductivity. Other topics that are covered, there are more than, you know, many topics are in two places. When, for example, is here, other topics, he spoke about some very general considerations where you can expect emergence of certain kinds of collective modes, which he calls artificial photons. We need to come up with a better name than artificial photons for that. But anyway, and you know, so that shows up, and I'm going to come back to Leo's talk. He gave what I thought an absolutely wonderful talk on things that are not only exotic, not maybe exotic in the sense we are defining it here, but surely exotic, but things that actually exist, you know. You take a material, change temperature by 10 degrees, it extends by a factor of 4. If that's not exotic, then I don't know what is. And, you know, I learned several things from his talk, and Eugene talked about optical lattices. So, extremely broad scope. What I noticed by listening to the talks and looking at the table of content and the abstracts, the scope of this conference was huge, okay? We had abstract mathematical talks. I imagine all of you would agree that Mike Friedman's talk was mathematical, right? I mean, is there any argument on that? It was mathematical, right? Okay, except for Nick, it was a mathematical talk. For Nick, it wasn't mathematical enough, okay? And Chetan's talk was very much it. I think Chetan is going back to his roots, I think. I thought that I finally, you know, seduced him, he has matured, and he's going to do band structure soon. And then he comes and gives this talk, okay? On loops, right? It's not good. He's going back, you know, backward, not good. And Shaogang Song, actually, although he tried to hide the mathematics, actually very mathematical subject, beautiful mathematical subject, with very strong connection to Mike Friedman's talk, with Shaogang very, you know, very cleverly kind of hit to fool us into thinking it's something we can wake up one morning and do, okay? Do not try that. It's you got to learn a lot of algebra. Then we have some, you know, we have some very concrete quantum Monte Carlo of Anders Sandvik, DMFT of Antoine Georges. These are very specific techniques, very computational intensive, and used for solving very specific problems, okay? And then we had very general talks by Preskill, Wen, Nagaosa on spin orbit, but Nagaosa talked about very specific things too. Basically the role of Berry phase when you have spin orbit coupling of chiral systems in transport properties, you know, it's general to concrete. And Friedman to very specific. Karsten Thiem's talk was on basically gallium manganese arsenide, Sandvik on one specific model, antiferromagnetic Heisenberg model. We had classical talk, as I already said, that Leo gave a very beautiful talk on very exotic classical systems. We had concepts like deconfinement fractionalization, which are, well, let me just put it this way. We don't know any applications of those things yet, okay? Well, the things don't exist, that's a problem. But even if they existed, we don't know any precise applications, like levitating a train or something like that, okay? To just give one arbitrary example.
Qubits?
Well, qubit connection, you know, I put qubit like levitating a train, it's who knows when. To very specific technology. We talked about quantum computation, spintronics, super high critical temperature. We had specific materials. Look at the scope, how broad the scope of specific materials is. We had this, you know, cesium copper chloride from Coldia to gallium arsenide bilayer. This is basically a free electron-like system with parabolic band. The system Jim talked about, really a parabolic dispersion free electron gas system. To systems that are very, very complicated from band structure viewpoint, you know, with three or four elements in them. Then we had dilated magnetic semiconductor, which is basically an alloy, spinels, cube plates, cold atoms, spin liquids. So the scope was very broad. And that is, again, because you do not know where exotica is going to show up. So we want to excite various communities. I saw five broad categories of topics, and you know, one can have subcategories in this. There were quantum spin models. Motivation essentially was beyond Lambda, Ginzburg, Wilson. Wen did not motivate it that way, but I see that falling in this category also. Sandvik was looking for that. I think that he didn't say he saw it, but that motivation was certainly there. He didn't talk about those aspects. That is slightly different work of his. And Motrich, Vishwanath, Senthil, these three talks were very well connected. And you know, they were on this topic, and they made no bones about it. I mean, that's what they're looking for. And you'll show up in HITC too. I mean, you did show up in HITC also, yes. And you are trying to apply to specific material. Chernyshev on quantum frustration, it's quantum spin model. And Nagaosa has connection to quantum spin model, although it's slightly different. Then topological matter and quantum computation, Preskill, Nayak, and Friedman directly on it. Wen and Nagaosa, because Nagaosa talked about Berry phase, not topological matter, but it's certainly Berry phase comes in, and Daimler could go in here also, because some part of his talk was certainly topological matter. We had heard a lot of talks on interplay of order, because we know that this exotic phase arises from interplayer order. I mean, the classic exotic phase you heard from Vishwanath, where you have two kinds of order, specifically nil order and VBS order on two sides, and the system somehow finds a way to have a continuous transition between them. And so interplayer order is very important. We heard many talks on interplayer order, leaving out even Exotica, you know, team's talk was DMS, which is disorder and ferromagnetism. Georges had that, Antoine had that in his title, Piles versus Mott, or Piles meets Mott. Eugene Demler talked about several specific examples where interplay of order plays a role. So did Bob Schiff had quantum criticality, and even in Nagausa's case, there was some interplay of order, somewhat more subtle. Classical critical without fine-tuning, what Leo talked about. Now, you know, in addition to the examples he gave, which are mostly I didn't know about, but they were fascinating, of course, there are well-known examples of classical critical without fine-tuning. Late Paul Bach, you know, became very famous talking about it, even gave it a name, self-organized criticality. In some other contexts, people talk about generic scale invariance. I know that Jeff Greenstein prefers the name generic scale invariance. I mean, you take a surface that's growing, you look at this, you know, growing surface. It's a different kind of power law, but it is a power law nevertheless. And that power law, there is no fine tuning, and there is a, you know, there is an exponent. It's a totally different class, but that's not very German to what you're talking about. That's more or less well understood where it's coming from. The problems are not solved. There's no solved problem in there either. But you know, you have wandering exponent, and you have a growth exponent, and there are other examples like that too.
Are you still working in that area?
No, I stopped. No. Basically because experiments, because in surface, well, this is a side question, you know, what this is all this KPZ type work, where you get generic scale invariance without tuning anything. And the reason is experiments are always on surfaces. Surfaces have all kind of solid state physics problems associated with lattices. So although we have some success compared to the experiment, the physics is sort of dominated by surface physics. It's the kind of thing Shivaji and you guys are discussing, that even if you have subtle critical phenomena, if you have other things overwhelming that, it's very difficult to extract it. And I basically got tired. I mean, I wrote last year, we wrote two PRLs, right, with experimentalists. I got tired of just doing data analysis, which is what you have to do there. Because the data analyst experimentalist will not do for you, because it's very complicated and it's become almost like experimental work. So once in a while I write a paper, but I'm not working on it in the sense I don't have a grant to work on it. So I work on it only once in a while. Okay? It's a very hard field. It's a very hard field. No, you have to have an operational definition. I mean, I write papers in it, but I'm not. Okay. And then the fifth category is experimental papers. The experimental papers, you know, they really each is on a different subject. It was pretty amazing to me. Although, for example, Ali and you know, Yazdani and Hill's talks are both on high TC. They really are, could be, you know, high TC was almost like an excuse there. They talked about very different aspects of them. And so it was, the experimental talks I personally found very stimulating and exciting because they covered many different phenomena. Okay, many, many different phenomena. Okay, some issues. Okay, and these issues were extensively discussed in our discussion. Okay, so this is redundant. Where and how to look for deconfined criticality, both as a phenomenon, but perhaps in numerics first, because as Matthew was making this point, that in numerical, even in numerical models, so you can solve everything, it's not so easy to see signatures of deconfined criticality. And that we must accomplish, because if you do not even accomplish that, I mean, the hope of seeing it in phenomena, or convincing people that you've seen it in phenomena is not very high. So I think Matthias, you gotta go right now and start doing something, okay? I mean, really, I think this is very important. And it's very difficult
I would reiterate that. So
right.
I think it's right.
It cannot be overemphasized, this thing,
yeah.
You know, important.
It's good numerics.
Yeah, yeah. The problem is that it's not so easy in numerics always to distinguish first order transition from a second order transition, but I mean, not always. And similarly, where and how to find topological matter, okay? I mean, should we look in the systems that we know of, fractional quantum Hall effect, you know, Moore-Reed is, you know, subtly topological, or those higher fractions which are truly non-abelian, k is equal to 3, 4, and higher numbers, rotating Bose-Einstein condensate, which could reach quantum Hall status if the speed goes high enough, but and the fractions, these non-abelian fractions will show up generically there, something I learned in our program, but on the other hand, it's not clear that the system will survive. The system might just fragment into little pieces by that time. You know, that's a very big problem. If you talk to experimentalists there, some of them are very skeptical that by the time it reaches the speed, it will be still a condensate. It may just break apart in little pieces. Optical lattice, you know, Eugene told us about Kitaev model making a Kogame lattice. I have this dream of making an artificial quantum dot Kitaev lattice. Well, Jim is gone, so I can talk about these things. So I have this dream that I'll take quantum dots and put them on a Kogame lattice, at the vortex, you know. And each quantum dot, you can put one electron these days. The magicians at Delft have shown last year that you can put one electron per dot in a controlled manner. You'll just need like 6-7 gates per dot, and you'll have this Kagome lattice. And it's a true, you know, it will be the true realization of Kitaev model. And
take off the microphone and tell us how long did that really take before we're doing quantum dots? Or Joe's induction arrays where it really had a raise more than 100 and we're controlling that.
Let me talk about the quantum dot array. Something I can make it. Because Joseph's induction array, if I say something negative, it sounds like I'm just saying it. So I think quantum dot array, making a Kitaev lattice, let's say, okay? If a Kitaev model, if people at Delft put all their energies into it, it's more than 5 years away. Okay, that means it may be much more. Okay, because they may encounter problems that I don't know of. Because I'm extrapolating from the technology of today. Okay, because see, in the early 90s, many of us proposed that make a Hubbard model. This is before optical lattice came. Make Mott Hubbard model and do analog simulation quantum dot lattice. A lot of people tried. MIT had a whole MRSEC IRG on that. And you make the lattice, there is basically no hopping, and all these problems. Okay, there's no hopping, there's too much disorder. And the problem is that they make the lattice, everything looks beautiful, then you look for Mott Hubbard transition, doesn't happen. And you know, Brad Marchand, a beautiful paper, is doing SUN generalization of this work, because you know, in quantum dot you can have SUN. You don't have to restrict yourself to SU2. Okay, you have all these subbands and so on. And all the beautiful work simulation is done, but it looks like even if you make the lattice, you don't see what you're hoping for because of all these extraneous effects. So, and you know, that just takes the motivation away from the experimenters, because it's very hard to make the system, and there is no problem. I'll keep this up now, because I'm basically almost done. Now, maybe the next part I should not talk about, since David Gross walked out, because this I did just for David Gross, okay? David Gross loves questions. I personally don't like questions, okay? But David Gross loves questions, so just for him, I made up questions, okay? 5 questions in Exotica. How and where to see deconfined criticality? How to see deconfined criticality in real Hamiltonians? What I mean by this is numerical work. I mean, okay, here. Mm-hmm. You know, is in any of these models where, you know, smart people think that there should be deconfined criticality, would numerics give us first order transition, more or less, you know, generically? I mean, and I'd like to know, how generic is topological matter? Okay. How do you break real non-Hamiltonians? And more questions, okay? How can you see non-trivial signatures of topological matter? This question was discussed at length just half an hour ago. This one, I would like to know the answer to this. Do I need to learn about this? Okay. Other than just intellectual curiosity, this is actually a half serious question, because people have their own tests in doing physics, right? My test is that I like understanding real phenomena quantitatively. Okay. I like putting my theory on experimental plots and seeing whether it agrees with 20% factor of 2 or factor of 2000. Okay. Now, that's the kind of thing I do, and are there ever going to be phenomena where this sort of question, I mean, you may say that's very boring, but you know, that's what I like doing, I mean, it's, and I'm giving the talk, so, okay, so, and for someone who does that kind of stuff, do I need to really learn about that, because, you know, when would it be useful, so it's
an optimist would say, when do you need to learn about it?
Right, when? You know, if it's, Matthew, the way my mind is going, if it's more than 10 years, it may be moved. Okay, you know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, will there be a real quantum computation? This is more a question for me, you know, topological or otherwise. Forget to put anything, okay? When I say real, I mean it enough number of qubits so that it can beat a classical computer.
It makes money, how about that?
Well, it makes money for it. It will never make money because it can only factorize numbers. Only NSA will have it. So what I mean is that by real, I mean it's so large that it can beat real classical computers. You're talking a million qubits, including error correction, okay? I have been quoted, nothing short by the greatest scientific journal, New York Times, that it will never happen. So then they said, never? I said, well, in my lifetime, what do I care about what happens after I'm dead? You know, couldn't care less, you know? So, does Exotica solve any existing problem? You know, this is something I think we are not putting enough thought into. There are all kinds of phenomena that are not completely understood. And it'd be nice to know that would exotic ideas, you know, throw any light at any of them. And this question comes associated with that. You know, we're hearing about pseudo gap. This exotic is not the same as this exotic, okay? I mean, pseudo gap competing orders of various kind. We heard Ali as then he presented a particular viewpoint, and we have heard other talks in our program How exotic is the pseudo-gap? Is it just, you know, good old competition between some orders? I mean, you know, in which case it's pretty boring, I mean, even from my perspective, or is it something deep there? I'd like to know. Well, this will be the last one. It's a pity David Gross is not here. I made up all these questions for him, okay? And he walked out. I hate questions. I made them just for him.
Okay.
Is anomaly, I'm done. Is anomaly a solid effect, all generic verifications? This I find very difficult to believe. Although data are presented claiming it to be all, because in semiconductors there is real scattering. And I find it very difficult to believe that all of anomalous Hall effect is coming just from Berry phase, and all this strong scattering within semiconductors is not doing anything. I mean, I know that that data were presented. Nadal's gave a beautiful talk, but I mean, I would like to know. I mean, dissipationless spin current, would that ever really be dissipationless spin current of any use to anybody? That means, will experimentalists try to see it? I do not see a rush of people trying to do this. DMFT versus LDA. This is just an insider thing. Only Atlan George, who walked out, no, he's there, understand it. I'm rooting for DMFT, but I mostly do LDA. And you know the reason.
They want to do both together.
I know.
What is the reason?
The reason is that LDA at this stage applies to a much bigger class of materials. It's only when you have more transition or something like that, which is very special, you definitely have to do DMFT. But what is happening, this new paradigm, well, new way of doing band structures is emerging, thanks to Antoine, Gabi, and others, and thanks to the great program that we had here a year and a half ago. No, seriously, where LD and DMFT are coming together. If that happens, it hasn't really happened completely. That would be a great, very non-exotic, but great development. Now I have some questions that I would like to know the answers to. I don't care about exotic anymore. Is there a DC Josephson effect in the bilayer intertunneling experiment? You know, this is semantic, almost, in Shaogang believes there is, I believe there isn't. Now, maybe we are saying the same thing. Maybe we are, you know. You know, that sometimes happens in science, okay? But I think this question needs to be addressed by theorists and actually answered. We need to come up with some experiment which distinguishes these two statements, and then I'm sure Jim will see the result which will validate my view. I know. Oh, you're back. You're not supposed to be back. So then the question of that, many of us view this James experiment, it's a very important experiment, as either excitonic condenser or neutral superfluid, or for that matter, pseudo spin XY ferromagnetism. And these two pictures are thought to be completely equivalent, and theoretically they are within some approximations. Are these two pictures completely equivalent for all the experiments in the real system? That's not clear to me at all. Because in the real system, you do not have exact electron hole symmetry. You have some other issues which are not quite ideal. And maybe one of these ways of looking at things is slightly more appropriate than one of the other ways. I know for explaining it to people, excitonic condenser picture is the best, because people immediately understand what the physics is. But I would like to know theoretically, is there a difference between them right now, among them? Right now, it seems there isn't. Another question is connected to this, this is Josephson effect. In these experiments of Jim Eisenstein, is the Coriolis transition temperature really zero? Which means then it's more like a Bose or gauge glass rather than, you know, a superfluid. Or not. I mean, it does make a difference, you know. So this again may not be experimentally distinguishable. This is very, very low. So, you know, and then there are this question, I'm just repeating what Leo said, are there quantum realization generically scaling variant phases and how to think about them. And this question came up almost in this language. Would BEC optical lattice ever teach us about totally new aspects of condensed matter physics? I mean, you did not put it this bluntly, or more polite than I am, but this is basically what it is, you know.
It might.
Absolutely it might. No, we should be open to that possibility. Yeah, and, you know, what, I mean, I think that... Absolutely, yes. Magnetism and frustration, you have had a lot of talks on that, and what happens when you add Coen's disorder to that, also physically. I think I'm going to stop now. I have a couple of more slides, but I think you get the picture, okay? Thank you very much.
Yeah, actually, once again, let's thank all the organizers, and particularly Leon, I think.
Absolutely. Yes.
Do you want to summarize Shankar's summary?
Thank you all for coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Especially the experimentalists willing to talk to the romantic theorists.
I have fun.
I've enjoyed lunch. Okay, we have.
Oh, we have lunch. Yeah. We have lunch. For sitting through my summary, you get lunch. Okay. I knew there would be a carrot at the end.